United States versus Skinner. Ms. Christensen.
May it please.
Central District of Illinois Public Defender is always ready, even if we...
We are always ready and ready to go.
Understand.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellate Robert Skinner in this case. Mr. Skinner's sentence of 60 years is unreasonable because the district court failed to give adequate consideration to the mitigating factors in this case. The court's findings that Mr. Skinner had no criminal history, but that was irrelevant based on the horrendous facts, essentially eviscerate the remaining 3553A factors in favor of cases that have horrendous facts. Admittedly, this case does have horrendous facts, as do many cases before this court. However, 3553A applies equally regardless of the facts of the case, and all factors should have been considered. Most importantly, the district court failed to consider the psychological evaluation, very positive psychological evaluation, that Mr. Skinner had done by a defense expert that said he was a good candidate for treatment and rehabilitation, that he had a very low risk of reoffending, no antisocial personality disorders or psychopathology, very low score on the three tests that he was given, including the hair psychopathology checklist, the static 99, and the multiphasic sex inventory. In fact, he was three times less likely to recidivate than the average sex offender. In the government's brief, the government does question the validity of the static 99, as this court had questioned in another previously decided case, United States versus McElrath. However, that was never questioned in the district court, the validity of this test, and should not be an issue in this case because the validity of the test is not really the issue. The findings of the psychologists and the other two tests are the issue as well.
Isn't recidivism in this area just very, very high, higher than virtually any other criminal area?
That may be so. That's not clear from the record. I think from general knowledge that may, in fact, be the case.
And the damage from recidivism is beyond horrendous. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree that recidivism in these type of cases is something that gets people fired up and is very serious. However, offenders are all different, whether they're sex offenders or they're drug offenders. And in this case, where the basis... The entire psychological evaluation that was done indicated that Mr. Skinner was not one of those people who would be likely to recidivate.
So what degree of accuracy do all of these tests combined really show?
Well, that's an entirely...
It's a difficult prediction.
It is a very difficult. And all psychological testing is very difficult to quantify because it involves the individual personalities and characteristics.
And that's why legislatures have enacted these offender registration lists all over the country, and there's just a tremendous concern about the effect of recidivism in this area.
Absolutely. I think that they should be given weight, certainly given weight at sentencing by the district court, because they are true and tried testing in the psychological field.
Well, isn't the judge's sentence here an implicit rejection of the prediction made by the evaluation here?
If it is, Your Honor, I'm not sure where this court would be able to find that reasoning in her declaration of the sentence. Aside from the fact that she gave him the maximum sentence that she could, but I don't know if that...
Well, she was clearly aware of the testing and the results and the arguments made. That's,
she had to have been, yes.
She could, unless she... could not hear and could not read, and we know that she can hear and she can read.
Right.
So with that in front of her, then to give the maximum sentence and stating detailed reasons for that because of the absolute horror of the criminal activity here and the effort to utilize it to cultivate, attempt to cultivate another victim,
mm-hmm.
Isn't that enough? Isn't that enough to tell us that she has rejected that defense argument?
I don't think it is, Your Honor. I don't think that it's enough to just assume, because she talked about only the negative evidence against Mr. Skinner, that she necessarily considered but rejected all positive evidence. I think that the facts of the case were horrendous, and the district court, with all due respect, got stuck on those facts. And my concern is that facts are one portion of a sentencing in any case, but the offender and the offender's past and future should also be considered by the district court, and I don't believe that that portion was considered by the court in this instance.
So if it goes back to another judge and the judge announces, in addition to an evaluation of how horrible this offense was and the effort to cultivate another victim and so on and so forth, and talks about those things, and also says, and I reject the prediction as not being sound, that he would not recidivate, so I'm giving the maximum sentence.
Could that sentence
be reversed?
I think that would comply with this court's decisions in Cunningham and Miranda that showed this court and the defendant that the district court has considered all of the arguments made in mitigation and aggravation when imposing his sentence. And I believe, as I just said, that Cunningham is a good example, because while the facts are very different, what the district court failed to consider, a strong argument in mitigation for the defendant, is very similar in this case, and failed to consider most of the mitigating evidence that was presented to it by Mr. Skinner. And as the government notes, no factors were disputed by the government. None of the findings of the testing or the conclusions of the psychologist were disputed, and the district court still chose not to consider them whatsoever. And I will reserve the remaining time for rebuttal unless the court at first has further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Mr. Donovan.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, the judgment of the district court should be affirmed because the court did take into account all of the arguments that were made both by the defense and by the government counsel and did make reference to what the court considered to be the most important issue at the time that the court pronounced sentence. The government outlined...
Mr. Donovan, how can we know that, sort of the opposite side of what I was asking your opponent? There's not a mention by Judge Manning of the psychological evaluation and this prediction of low likelihood of recidivism. Is there? I haven't been able to find it.
That you are correct, Your Honor. As the government argued in its brief, the court's mention of the defendant's criminal history is a reference to the defendant's recidivism or likelihood of recidivism, since that is one of the reasons why a sentencing court would, in fact, consider a defendant's criminal history. Ultimately, what's important, I think, is the district court's vehemence in rejecting that particular consideration. The court said it is totally irrelevant, and the court said, in light of the horrendous facts of the case. In other words, the likelihood of future recidivism is an issue, and the criminal history of the defendant is an issue that the court considered totally irrelevant because of the serious nature of the offense. And that is something that the court is saying essentially is far, far outweighed. And what the defense would like to do here on appeal is to sort of recalculate or recalibrate the court's consideration of the various factors at sentencing.
I guess the difficulty I'm having is knowing whether Judge Manning actually figured this evaluation into that calculus, if there's no reference to it whatsoever.
And, Your Honor, there is not an explicit reference to the psychological testing or to the conclusion of the psychologist. However, I think based on the record that's present at the sentencing, it's very clear, and I think that's available, obviously, to Your Honors in the record, it's very clear that this is a truly remarkable case in the horror of the events that took place here. And I think the district court is warranted in giving a guideline sentence, and it was no more no less than that, based on that factor. It is clear from the record that the defense counsel mentioned the submission that he had made and the psychological testing in the argument that he provided moments before the sentence was pronounced, and I would read the court's statement about the irrelevance of the defendant's criminal history as a response to that by saying the issue that the court found most important in sentencing here and in balancing the 3553 factors is, in fact, the seriousness of the offense and the facts that existed in this case. In addition, Your Honor, I would point out that the government did provide a lengthy argument and go through each of the 3553 factors to advise the court of why each of those factors indicated that a guideline sentence was appropriate.
But the government argument didn't address the psychological evaluations, did it?
No, Your Honor, it did not.
So did you concede those? I'm
sorry.
Did you concede those as being accurate, this prediction of low likelihood of recidivism?
No, we did not, Your Honor. We simply attempted to focus the court on the 3553 factors and to outline the reasons why the seriousness of the offense required a very serious punishment, and that the need for a serious punishment and deterrence of like defendants, as well as the concern about protecting the public, indicated that the guideline sentence was, in fact, appropriate in this case.
Is it fair to say that the psychological evaluation was the defendant's primary sentencing argument?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the...
Is it fair to characterize this psychological evaluation as the defendant's primary sentencing argument in this case?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the defendant's memorandum did provide other arguments, including the defendant's work history and other characteristics of the defendant. In addition, it was not the only thing that was focused on orally by defense counsel, nor was it part of the defendant's allocution, although that was very brief. So I don't think it's fair to say that it was the sole nor even the primary argument. It certainly was devoted serious attention to it in the submission. But I think that it's clear that the defendant was seeking to have the court consider other aspects. In fact, there's an exchange between the defendant and the court in the sentencing transcript where the court is inquiring about the defendant's work history because a defense counsel had focused the court on that issue as one of the reasons why the defendant could reintegrate into society. So, Your Honors, the government would ask that the judgment be affirmed primarily because the district court made its own calculation about the 3553 factors. The district court came to the conclusion that the seriousness of the offense warranted the guideline sentence that was imposed here, and to try to upset that calibration or that calculation that was made by the district court is not required. And in fact, the district court gave a meaningful consideration to the factors that was appropriate. And although it was not certainly not a lengthy discussion with respect to this particular factor, which the defense has highlighted, nonetheless, that factor was considered and rejected by the district court.
But now, your Mr. Donovan's position is that it was considered because it was presented to the judge.
Because it was presented, Your Honor, and also because the district court did state that the defendant's criminal history was totally irrelevant, and because the district court would understand that the criminal history of the defendant is in part a proxy for the defendant's likelihood of future recidivism, that, in fact, is a reference by the court, although admittedly implicit, to the defendant's likelihood of future recidivism. The court was simply saying, in this case, based on the district court's view of things, that issue is not as important as the seriousness of the offense.
Well, in light of the concern that recidivism in these kinds of cases appears to be high, or there's a public concern of that, the lack of mention of it specifically would, to me, suggest that as I understand your argument, Mr. Donovan, that if the seriousness is so grave, which one could argue always occurs in cases like this, that there's no possibility of a report like this ever trumping or impacting, I should say, not trumping, the crime. Is that what you would have us believe in this case? In other words, it's irrelevant.
I think
once the judge decides the seriousness, Mr. Donovan, is so grave that she or he need not even address it?
I would not say that the district court need not address it, but that on balance, when you know one multiplies the seriousness of the offense and the grave danger of any recidivism in the future against even a small percentage of future conduct by this defendant of the same nature, the calculus turns out to warrant a very, very lengthy sentence in order to put this defendant beyond a position where he would be able to recidivate in the, or to you know, reoffend in the future. So for those reasons, Your Honors, that the government asks that the judgment be affirmed unless there are any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Christensen?
May it please the Court. I'll respond to a couple of the factors brought up. The Court asked whether just because it was whether you could find that the district court considered it just because it was presented. And this court has rejected that notion in both Cunningham and Miranda. Things are often presented to the district court, and there's no way to know without the court specifically saying something about a primary argument made by the defense, whether it was considered. That also leads to the primary argument. It certainly was not the primary argument by the defense. I mean, in any one of these cases where a client is looking at a life sentence, defense counsel is going to present every possible mitigating factor to the district court. But it was a significant argument, and it was an expert opinion about one of the factors that 3553A makes very important. And finally, I would like to emphasize that any ruling that horrendous facts become the most important factor in a sentencing decision essentially makes cases like this and other cases with horrendous facts a group of their own where 3553A no longer applies. This court has held in guideline situations that sex offense cases cannot be sentenced mandatorily under the guidelines. In several cases, the court has remanded cases for that reason. It's the same thing with 3553A factors. One portion cannot be held mandatory and in certain types of cases. Unless there are further questions, I would ask this court to remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We'll return.